This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. People try to put us down just because we get around. Things they do look awful cold. I hope I die before I get old. Talking about my generation, that's the who that they had to say about being a baby boomer in 1965. Today's generation at issue is the millennials, and we have a generation showdown with them. That's according to Paul Taylor. He's the author of a book, The Next America, and he is the executive vice president of special projects for the Pew Research Center. Paul, welcome to The Source.
Nice to be with you.
I think your special project is to make people like me feel very old.
Well, listen, I'm probably your age or even older. I do remember that Who song. I do remember those times. And one of the points of the book is actually to compare the coming-of-age experiences of today's millennials, which is a generation we describe as everybody born after 1980, so the oldest of them are now in their early 30s, and the boomers when they came of age back in the turbulent 1960s. And actually, there are more differences than similarities. They're both very big generations. They are profoundly interesting generations, and early in their lives, they've made a lot of noise in terms of their social values and their political votes.
So we have to be aware and try not to fall into the trap of kids, what's the matter with kids today, type of mentality, always looking at the next generation, saying that they're lazy and they don't they have it too good, and if only they had it like I did, then they would appreciate things a little bit better.
Yeah, let me make two points about first. Let's start with the great Who quote, and you know, part of the boomers back in the '60s was it was the era of civil rights and women's rights and anti-war protests and occupying the dean's office. And
sure, it was the counterculture.
There was a counterculture, and there was sort of a whiff of generation war in the air, and it was, in addition to the quote, the lovely quote you had, it was, never trust anybody over 30, that our generation, my generation coming of age, was pretty sure that our parents and grandparents had screwed up just about everything about the country. Thank God we had come along to make things right. We have some data on our generation now. The boomers are now in their 50s and 60s, and they're on the cusp of Social Security and Medicare, and they've actually gotten a little more conservative over the years. They're a little bit gloomy. They maybe didn't change the world quite as much as they hoped they would, although I will say that in terms of the values of tolerance and inclusion, they won that war, if you will, and America, I would say, is a better place for it. Coming ahead to today, you have the millennials who, like the boomers, in their political and social values are distinctly different from older adults. They're much more liberal. So on almost any measure you can, how they voted for Barack Obama twice in big numbers, their views about legalization of marijuana, same-sex marriage, they're more affirmative about government. But an important difference is they don't point a finger of blame at their parents' generation. They actually think their parents and grandparents are pretty cool. We ask a question, who has better moral values these days, the young or the old? A majority of millennials say the old have better values. And I guess the last point of difference I would make is that the boomers, one of the reasons why the boomers had such freedom to engage in the countercultural protests is they were coming of age in a roaring economy where, you know, unemployment rates were 2-4%. Jobs were out there, you know, so I quote somebody in my book saying, you know, I didn't have to look for a job, someone who got a PhD in 1968, the job came looking for me. That's not the world that millennials, as is well known, are graduating from school into, and we know the record levels of high unemployment for young adults these days, which is affecting almost everything. One of the things the book points out is that the marriage rates among today's young adults are much lower. So of 20-somethings today, only about a quarter are married. You go back a generation or two, 60-70% of older generations were married at the same age. The biggest reason kids today aren't getting married is they say to themselves, I'm not a good marriage partner. I don't have a steady job. I can't be a good provider. That then has resulted in an uptick, a dramatic rise in births out of wedlock. These are outcomes that nobody is too happy about. You ask the American public about this, they say, no, this isn't good for society. And it's changing the shape and structure of our families in ways that the family's a pretty resilient organism, and it seems like it knows how to adapt, but there are some downsides to this. Anyway, I guess I'm talking too long, but this is a generation that's been dealt a lousy hand economically. They know it. Their parents know it. But they're not spoiling for a fight over this. Frankly, a lot of the reason is they're hanging out with mom and dad. It turns out to be a good place to hang out if you can't find a job. The refrigerator is stocked. You don't have to put coins in the washing machine, and you don't want to bite the hand that feeds you. And nowadays, a lot of middle-aged adults are still taking care of their young adult children.
Our phone lines are open. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. If you want to talk to Paul Taylor about his new book, The Next Generation, talking about millennials and the looming generational showdown with baby boomers, call in, or you can send an email to thesource@tpr.org. And so the millennials, like the older millennials, they're about 32.
The oldest of them has just turned 33. And the other very distinctive thing about this generation, it is our most racially diverse generation. More than 4 in 10 of this generation is non-white. This is quite different. The boomers, nearly 8 in 10 were white. They're a transitional generation of children born today, babies born today, about half are non-white. Certainly Texas has witnessed that change pretty dramatically. So in terms of everything that goes with racial identity and racial tolerance, they are in a different place from their parents and grandparents. It's one of the reasons why they were as enthusiastic supporters of Barack Obama, who reflects some of the racial changes. You know, of all recent marriages in this country, almost 1 in 6 are across racial and ethnic lines. When Barack Obama's parents got married in 1961 in Hawaii, this was a gasm-inducing taboo. We estimate that something like one marriage in 1,000 was across those racial lines. So it's just a different world, and I guess the other biggest difference, of course, is they're digital natives. They are the only generation in human history for which all this revolutionary change in how we communicate, how we use all these devices in our hands to build social networks. This is something somebody my age, you know, adapts to and kind of brings up the rear in terms of usage. But these kids do it naturally. The average millennial has 250 Facebook friends. The average person my age, well, many fewer of them are on Facebook, but those who are on have, you know, 20, 30, 40 Facebook friends. So it's just a different world.
All right, we're going to dig in more into this different world and what it means, what the challenges and the opportunities that that out there for millennials, and what it means for baby boomers, and even the next generation, what's coming after the millennials. That's all up for grabs. We're going to be talking about that. If you've got a question, if you want to make a comment about the millennials, call in. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org, or you can comment directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. Talking about the next generation here on The Source. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. The United States is going through a big demographic change. The next generation that's coming up that's going to be taking power, the millennials, have very different attitudes about politics, about life, about religion, about race, about gender. All that's changing in America, and I think we're kind of seeing that now as we see this huge sea change across the nation about same-sex marriage and about marijuana laws. Writing about that is Paul Taylor, and he's with the Pew Research Center. He's written the book, The Next America, and we invite your phone calls and comments to talk about these changes and the millennials and what's out there for them. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. And Paul, I'm going to kick a call here. I got Victor on the line. Victor, welcome to The Source. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay. Go ahead, Victor.
I'm 31 years old, and I'm actually happy to find out that I am a millennial. I was thinking I was pretty old. But my question is, do you think that the higher tolerance that millennials have for controversial subjects, you know, like gay marriage and all that, do you think that it has something to do with the fact that our life expectancy is higher?
Good question, Victor. Thanks for that question. Let's get Paul in on this. Paul Taylor.
You know, that is a great question, and I don't think so. I mean, I don't think that the life expectancy, the duration of life expectancy is something that people in their 20s and 30s think much about. You know, I say this somewhat jokingly, people that age think they're going to live forever. They're invincible. And you know, there's been some of that around the Affordable Care Act, how hard it is to get young adults to even be persuaded that they need health insurance. I will say, though, that increasing life expectancy is a very important part of the demographic changes going on in the country. I already mentioned we are on our way to become a rainbow nation by the middle of this century. You know, we'll be majority non-white, you know, led by the Hispanic immigration, Asian immigration are the two leading drivers of that. But we will also be a record gray population, a record older population. And this goes not only to increase longevity, life expectancy, which is now, you know, 100 years ago, the typical person, American at birth, could expect to live to be 49. Today, at birth, you can expect to live to be 79 at the median. Within 30 or 40 years, you'll be in the mid-80s. So people are living longer. And the other thing that's going on is my generation, the boomers, was a huge generation. We were born right after World War II, big spike in fertility. The typical woman then had three kids. Today, the typical woman has two kids. So the boomers put a lot of pressure on a lot of systems in the 50s and 60s. They had to build a lot of schoolhouses for us and all the rest. Well, here we are now on the doorstep of old age, and 10,000 baby boomers will turn 65 today, another 10,000 tomorrow, the next day, et cetera, all the way to the year 2030. And by the time all this big pig in a python generation is into old age, collecting Social Security and Medicare, lo and behold, those two programs will be broke. And this is a big, big challenge. So those programs need to be rebalanced to more accurately be in sync with the new demographics of the 21st century. The math simply doesn't work. So the challenge is politically, we know how popular those programs are. Politically, how do we rebalance that at a time when young and old don't look alike, don't think alike, and don't vote alike? That is going to be a domestic policy challenge that will play out over the next couple of decades. The point my book makes is, and the point that every expert who looks at this makes, including the public trustees of the Social Security system, one Democrat, one Republican, is we can see this coming. We know when these programs run out of money. It's much better to take this problem on now, because the longer you wait, the harder it is to fix them. So that's one of the appeals that the book makes at the end. Let's think seriously about this.
Yeah, but baby boomers, are they going to get out of the way? I mean, you know, you're making a case where they have to work longer because the mm-hmm. Social Security and retirement system pensions are all bankrupt. It's not going to be able to support them. Social Security is not bankrupt, but it's not what we thought it was going to be. But and so people are talking about working longer. But now we have the generation, yeah. The millennials, they need jobs too. So right. What's going to happen?
I don't know. I mean, there's no question older adults are staying in the workforce longer. There are two reasons for that. One is they're not as well fortified financially for the journey into retirement that they hoped. But there's a second reason, which is a much happier reason, which is people are not only living longer, but they are healthier in old age. And they, you know, so a 62-year-old, a 65-year-old, you know, and there are fewer jobs these days that wear people out the way the old manufacturing or farming jobs would have a couple of generations ago. So people look at themselves at age 65 and say, hey, I got a lot of years left. I feel great. I want to stay active. We've done surveys on this, and the biggest reason people work beyond 65 is not so much that they need the money, it's that they want to stay engaged. And I don't, you know, there are studies as to whether then this now crowds out. This is one of the reasons why younger adults are having trouble getting jobs. Most of the studies I've seen suggest that that isn't the main reason, that the main reason young adults are having trouble getting jobs has to do with much broader phenomena around globalization and particularly around technological change, where you have computers and now robots just eliminating whole categories of jobs.
All right, let's get more callers on the air. Alice is called in. Alice, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I'm 33, so I'm an older millennial, and I teach college students. I teach 18 and 19-year-olds composition, and we think a lot about their place in society. But right now we're talking about the American college town, and the American college town was really influenced by World War II and the baby boom generation, et cetera. My question is about, well, how do millennials, or how does this generation of individuals figure in other countries? So is this, how is it a purely American phenomenon? And then what would be the difference with this generation, let's say in France or Great Britain?
All right, I'll Alice, thanks for the call. Appreciate that call.
Great question. Well, on two of the trends I've mentioned, these are global trends. One of them is the delayed journey to marriage. This is happening in almost all of the prosperous countries of the world, certainly throughout Europe, throughout the prosperous countries of Asia. I think it does have to do with the difficult economic circumstances that a lot of young adults have in many economies. I think it has to do with changing gender roles. Women now are much more career oriented at a young age than their mothers and grandmothers were, and for them, it's often, you know, marriage and baby making comes after. Let me get myself established in a career. The second thing that's happening all over the world is, of course, the digital revolution. And, you know, we just put out a report. It was on some of the same themes of the book, but it was a new survey we just did a few weeks ago where it looked at this generation of young adults is detached from the classic anchor institutions of society. I mentioned one, marriage. They're very slow and late to marriage. Also, organized religion and organized politics. So this generation of millennials, we know from their voting behaviors and their answers to survey questions, they're very liberal. They were a big vote for Barack Obama twice. But if you ask them their political affiliation, a record share say, I'm independent. They in effect, say a pox on both of their houses. I don't like the political parties. I don't like the political systems. We see something, frankly, a little bit similar with religion. This is the most religiously disaffiliated generation that we've ever measured in modern times. About 3 in 10, you ask them what religion they are, and they say, I have no religion. This is double the share for older adults. And so what is it? How do they engage with the rest of the world if they're not doing it through these anchor institutions, political, religious, marital? And the answer is that they use social media, which, again, is just the wallpaper of their lives. They use it to construct their own networks, and they build very extensive networks of friends, of colleagues, of affinity groups. And it's a very empowering device because, to a degree never before in human history, they can actually place themselves at the center of these universes and share all sorts of information about themselves. And we had a moment, at the Oscars last week with the selfie. You know, the selfie was Oxford Dictionary's Word of the Year in 2013. Oxford Dictionary is a global publishing company. So the selfie is part of who they are. You ask, we did a survey, again, a few weeks ago. We asked older adults, have they ever taken a selfie and put it online and shared it? And literally 5% of older adults had. And indeed, among the oldest generation, 65 and over, only a third even knew what a selfie was. So that's just part of the new fabric of growing up and how people engage with the rest of the world.
All right, another caller. Let's get him on the air. Matthew's called in. Matthew, welcome to The Source. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for having me. I guess my position here, I am also a somewhat early millennial. I'm 30. And I kind of wanted to speak about that generation war that was mentioned earlier. Now, I'm not thinking that all of my elders are sitting around cackling and twiddling their thumbs about how they're screwing us over, but there's almost an impression as though the older generation doesn't care whenever we ask, you know, how are we supposed to get a leg up in this world? They say, just do what we did. And that method doesn't seem to be working for us.
Okay. Matt?
Well, I'm very, speaking as an older adult, very sympathetic to that complaint. I think, and I think the data bears this view out and your view out, this generation economically has sort of been screwed. And it's not as if it's done with malice. It's just the way the economics of this country and much of the world are changing. So I have a chapter in the book that points out that on almost any economic indicator you look at, and you look at the trends over the last 20, 30, or 40 years, and you measure today's young adults and how they are doing with employment, unemployment, wealth, poverty, income, wages, pick any of those statistics and say, let's look at today's 20 and early 30-somethings and compare them in real inflation-adjusted dollars against the same, you know, the older generations when they were the same age. Today's kids are having a harder time on every single one of those dimensions. Then if you look at today's older adults, pick your age category, 65 and over, 50, you know, 60 and over, and you can compare older adults with yesterday's older adults, you do the same run, and they're doing better. So in terms of relative prosperity over the last several decades, the old have prospered relative to the young. Some of that is a changing economy. Frankly, some of that is the way we have organized, the way we spend our federal dollars. The two huge programs for older adults, Social Security and Medicare, are eating up an ever larger share of our budget. A generation ago, they were about 20% of their budget. You know, within 10 or 15 years, they'll be 50% of the budget. It's crowding out a lot of investments in infrastructure and education that presumably would be more helpful to younger adults. Now, one reason those programs get so much money is, again, the baby boomers are now making claims on them, and they need the funding. Frankly, another reason, though, is they are remarkably successful and remarkably popular, and it's not just the older adults that benefit from them. The children and grandchildren of the older adults do. Everybody likes these programs. But as I said earlier, the math just doesn't add up. And getting ourselves to a place where the politicians have the guts to take this challenge on, knowing what a strong lobby older adults are, knowing how deeply they're protective of those programs, is really, I think, the central domestic policy challenge of the coming decade.
Paul Taylor, he is the author of the book, The Next America. He is with the Pew Research Center, writing about the millennials and what's making up the millennials and the conflict that they will be having with the baby boomers. Thank you for joining us, Paul.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Coming up in the next half hour, we're talking about body cameras for San Antonio police officers, a program being rolled out. Stay tuned for that.